Welcome to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. The election of Donald Trump worries a lot of people, some women, immigrants, Muslims. They're wondering if Trump's presidency will be anything like his campaign rallies and what that might mean for their lives. In the wake of this election, we've seen a couple of dozen events across Michigan. For one instance, a man beat up a cab driver of East African descent, yelling again and again, "Trump!" Students at a middle school chanting, "Build the wall," while surrounding Latino students. A white man threatened to set a Muslim woman on fire if she didn't remove her head covering. Amr Zahr is a Palestinian-American who lives in Dearborn. He's a comedian, professor, and speaker, and is the editor of The Civil Arab. So you tell jokes. How do you joke about these things we're seeing in Michigan and across the nation?
Yeah, right. So after all that, let's talk about comedy, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look, you know, they always say tragedy brings the best comedy, and I actually do believe that. Comedy is most needed in times of maybe despair or instability or uncertainty, and we're definitely going through that in America right now. For Arabs and Muslims in America, that's sort of the default state of affairs. We're always in those kinds of times. This is nothing new. This is just a little ramped up for us. So as a comedian, I kind of deal with these things all the time. And look, we're holding this comedy festival this weekend in Dearborn, hopefully before Trump deports us all. And I think it's Wyoming. I think that's where we're going to end up, Wyoming, which I hear is very nice.
Wyoming, Michigan, or the state?
No, the state, yeah, okay. I think. It's the least densely populated state in America, so I think that's where we're going.
I'm wondering, have you done any stand-up shows since the election?
Yeah, I've done a few, about three or four since the election, a couple in the weekend right after the election. One show in Grand Rapids around a very diverse audience, and then another shows in New Jersey and Phoenix and Chicago since then around crowds that were mostly Arab and Muslim. And, you know, you feel the sort of tension and you feel the sort of uncertainty, and comedy sort of serves as this therapeutic thing to kind of break some of that, let people go a little bit, let them release a little bit of that tension. And that's what I've been seeing. And people are still laughing like they were before, maybe laughing in a little bit different way for a little bit different reasons, but they haven't lost that laughter.
I want to ask you about the Grand Rapids appearance particularly. I mean, there's a fairly good chance that some of the people who attended your show voted for Trump. Are you telling stories or jokes about them or for them?
To me, the best comedy is when I'm talking about myself. So when I'm talking about things that have happened to me or my point of view of life or my point of view of things that I see going on around me. In that sense, I'm being very honest and genuine as to the way I'm seeing the world. If people can take that and laugh with me when they see it, no matter what sort of political disposition they might be coming from, then that's great. And that's what I'm hoping to do. And I think comedians can't really talk about other people. They got to talk about themselves or about their point of view about something.
So how are you feeling in a post-Trump election?
As an Arab, as somebody who comes from a Muslim background, I also worked for Bernie Sanders in this last election. This whole thing wasn't very surprising to me that all happened. I wasn't shocked by it. And I think, you know, I'm an optimist. You know, I'm a Palestinian, so I don't really have a choice other than being an optimist. I'm just an optimist all the time. And so as an optimist, I kind of am hoping that this is a chance for us as Americans to sort of really get together and have real conversations that we've been avoiding for a long time. If I saw anything happen in this election, it was that Americans of different racial backgrounds still view racism and the legacy of racism in totally disparate ways. So it would be silly to say that the people who voted for Trump or most of the people that voted for Trump are racist. However, what it does seem to be is that his racism and his xenophobia, those weren't breaking points for them. Whereas for non-white people, we don't have the luxury of saying, well, those things don't affect us. They're not going to – he doesn't mean that, you know. But you saw a lot of that coming from Trump voters. I think maybe this is an opportunity for us to have real discussions about those things. Whereas if Hillary got elected, maybe we wouldn't have those discussions. Maybe we'd be celebrating, you know, falsely or rightly. But, you know, if I'm looking at the cup half full or 10% full or however full it is, then that's the way I'm looking at it.
You made some of those points in a piece titled "A Letter to My Trump Voting Neighbors." What do you want the white people, guys like my age who voted for Trump, what do you want them to get out of that fact? You mentioned that voting for Trump, even though we'd heard a lot of very racist things, wasn't a deal breaker. What do you want them to hear from this letter that you wrote?
Well, I think what the conversation that still needs to happen. So racism and the legacy of racism in America is something I talk about a lot in my comedy. But also as an academic and a historian, you realize that while it's a problem for non-white people. It's not a problem of non-white people. It's a problem that white America needs to deal with and how they deal with these legacies of supremacy and all these kinds of things. So the conversation that needs to be had is to say, look, I need you to understand when he says these things, that affects me directly. And that affects the way that I feel secure as an American. So when he says he wants to ban Muslims coming from a foreign country, why am I worried about that as an American? Because I know what he's saying is being Muslim, which is nothing new, by the way. He's saying being Muslim is dangerous and inherently foreign and inherently un-American. So once you do it to foreigners, you can get away with that. Well, the next step that we're worried about is you're going to do it to us. So then they talk about some registries and all that kind of stuff. And to be fair, Trump is not the only one doing it. He was doing it loudly and explicitly. But at the same time, you had Hillary Clinton, unfortunately, saying during the election that Muslims should be the eyes and ears against terrorism. I mean, what the heck does that mean? You know, do they think we're having secret meetings or something like that? You know, that we have some special knowledge of these things. That's always how we're painted in political discourse, in the media, and in society. I need to have a conversation with my white American fellow citizens that this stuff really affects me on a daily basis. And if you believe in America, the idea of America as a diverse, changing America, and if you're okay with the demographics of America getting browner by the day, which they are, and we should all enjoy that, then we need to have this discussion about how this kind of talk cannot be okay. And while you might not have that same reaction when he talks about race, for instance, I know a lot of white Americans went totally crazy when Trump mocked the disabled reporter, as they should. And that to them was more of a breaking point than the racial stuff was to me. And I can understand that. Maybe you have a relative that has those kinds of issues, so you get more riled up about that. Well, I'm asking them to get riled up about the stuff that affects me on a daily basis too, because it seems like too many people just dismiss that. And that's maybe a privilege of whiteness to kind of say, hey, you know, that's not going to affect me. I can dismiss it. But for us, that's not something we can have a privilege with. We have to live with that and we can't let it go. And that's the conversation that we need to have.
You've said comedy is a way to protest. What do you mean by that?
Well, comedy in its purest form was protest, right? I mean, like, even if you look at the court jesters of the medieval times, the only reason they didn't get their head cut off is because they were making somebody laugh. Comedy is a way to say what you would like to say against power, but when you use laughter, the response doesn't have to be, you know, throwing you in jail or anything like that. See, if you have somebody who's, let's say, taking away your rights or oppressing your freedoms or something like that, if you yell and scream and protest, that's kind of how they expect you to handle it and they know how to respond to that. However, if somebody's trying to take away your rights and you start laughing at them, they don't know how to handle that. This is not the first time we've seen it. Richard Pryor did that back in the day. Dave Chappelle's been doing it forever. Talking about these really, really difficult issues. Comedy sometimes is about pointing out the absurdities and the ridiculousness of society using laughter, right? Comedy is my tool for activism because at the end of the day, I'm trying to get something done. And I've realized that if you make people laugh, they listen to you and they don't cut your head off in the town square.
This weekend in Dearborn, the fourth annual 1001 Laughs Dearborn Comedy Festival is being held. How will this year's festival differ from the previous years?
Well, so actually, this has been a partnership between me and the Arab American Museum in Dearborn. Mm-hmm. Before, the festivals have been admittedly sort of Arab heavy in their performers. This year, we're balanced really nicely between a lot of African American performers, Arab performers, white performers. We have a Native American comedian coming and joining us from Colorado. So I really wanted to make this festival more about the whole sort of image of America and talking these different voices than simply an Arab festival, which has been the past few years. So that's how it's really changed this year. So I want to reach out to every community, Black community, Native community, every community to come out and say, hey, I got your performers on stage. I want you to come and hear their voices, hear other voices too. I want white Americans to come out. There's white comedians performing to come and hear all these different voices. But I didn't want the comedy festival just to have sort of one cultural take anymore. I wanted it to have many cultural takes and be a real comedy festival that represented many diverse faces of America. That's how we're changing. And we have two shows on Friday night, December 2nd, two shows on Saturday night, December 3rd.
Where?
At the Arab American Museum in East Dearborn, in Dearborn. There's two shows each night. We have four shows altogether. We have 17 comedians performing in the festival. If you come to a show, you'll get anywhere from like 10 to 12 comedians performing in that festival. So it's going to be really fun. We sell out a lot, but we're still want to reach out to as many people as we can. And the website is 1001laughs.com. 1001laughs.com. It's like 1001 Arabian Nights, Lester. You get it, right? So 1001laughs, 1001laughs.com has all the information about the performers and the tickets.
Amr Zahr is a comedian, author, an adjunct law professor at the University of Detroit Mercy Law School, and the editor of Civil Arab at civilarab.com. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot.